You know, if we didn't see it on so many occasions, we probably wouldn't believe how thick-headed the apostles are on an occasion like today. They have this reverential fear of what Jesus is saying. We heard some of his tough sayings about camels, needles, etc. yesterday and the day before, that Jesus warns them unequivocally that being his disciple will have difficulties. And then he tells the same thing today. And then right after that, not a moment's hesitation, they immediately make the association between being an apostle and having glory. And this, I find, is the great litmus test for a lot of people who claim they want power in the church. Most conversations about authority in the church, giant waste of time as far as I'm concerned. Because if people really want to show who has authority in the church, I would say right away, the toilet needs to be cleaned. And unless you're willing to clean the toilet, I have no time for that. This is what makes us Christians, that we are willing to take the lowest place. Now, why do we not want to take the lowest place? That's the problem. And it's usually because we're afraid of losing our dignity. Right? We're afraid of being treated like a slave. We're afraid of being treated like a vassal. We're afraid of people walking all over us. But if Christ is willing to have people walk all over him, and we claim him to be God, then really, there is no lack of dignity in it. Maybe it's because we're worldly addicts. We know what we should be doing, and yet our body fights against us whenever we actually want to get clean. And you can see how this drama plays out, not just in the lives of the apostles, but throughout history. And the two saints I want to comment on specifically, Venerable Bede, we really know next to nothing about the guy. 7th century Anglo-Saxon Benedictine, not bishop, Anglo-Saxon Benedictine. And he gives us one of the only histories of the Anglo-Saxon people, the history of the English people. And the reason why he's interesting is just because he's a historian, as far as I'm concerned, at least for the purposes of what I want to talk about today. He's a historian. And being a Christian requires that you have a historical mind. That doesn't mean you have to know 2,000 years of world history, of Christian history, or 5,000 years of human civilization. Very often the plot remains exactly the same. And if you know your relatives, you know history. You know how petty, ridiculous, strange, confusing people can be. And I found that the other saint, Gregory VII, he lives in a period when the dynamics of family and power, this is now we're in the 11th century, the dynamics of family and power dominated the world. And Gregory VII started probably three things that have had a huge and lasting impact on Christianity for several centuries to come. First is what we call the Gregorian Reforms. He was a major reformer in church history and helped establish the rule of law, not just in Christianity, but also in the larger world of Christendom itself. And the reason why he wanted these legal reforms was to be able to show that the church was held to a higher standard than the whims of an individual despot. Because for a large period in history, a king would just say, I want this to be done, his will becomes law, and then, of course, it gets done. He wanted it to be based on divine law, and then to be able to be universally accessible and understandable. And so he went through a massive period of reform in the early Middle Ages, which we are still having the benefits of today. Second one. He was the one who also formally determined and enforced clerical celibacy. Now, this is really important. Celibacy had always been a part of the church's tradition, especially among her apostles. But let's just say that even when celibacy was the publicly accepted practice of priests, it wasn't exactly something they actually lived. In fact, it was a common scandal that a priest or a bishop would have like this harem in secret. And sometimes it got so bad that everyone knew there was the secret harem and it wasn't a secret. You know, like you don't need to go too far back into history to realize how horrible it was. and the levels of corruption that were associated with it, Gregory wanted the church to be held to a higher standard so that if we're going to preach something, we're going to practice it. And so he started actively promoting the celibacy, the practice of celibacy. And of course, guess who hated him the most for it? Priests. Because that obviously meant that, you know, the good times were not a rolling in the same way as they once were. The last thing that he got into a big conflict with was with the emperor of, well, we would call it Germany, but they called it the Holy Roman Empire. There's a classic joke among historians that the Holy Roman Empire was neither holy nor Roman, because it was based in Germany, and it was the long, lingering vestiges of Roman imperial mindsets. But you can understand, though, this has a huge impact on the development of Christianity, at least Western Christianity. Because for so many people, for so long, power and God go together. If the emperor with the biggest stick decrees something, it is fact. And the pope, even though he would sometimes have a modest army to defend his lands, depending on the century, was a relatively military powerless entity. And Gregory and Emperor Henry, the Henrys, were in constant conflict. And Gregory helped wage the battle, not in terms of who clubs who with the biggest stick, which was generally the custom for much of Western Europe up until this history, but to be able to say that because we are Christians, you, my Imperial Majesty, are held to a different standard. And because I am your pastor, you should understand that I am telling you this. Now, mind you, Gregory VII died in exile. And there's another thing that he got into a major conflict with is the appointment of bishops. Normally, up until this point and for a little while, kings would determine who was the bishop, much like how modern China tries to determine local bishops. And eventually, Gregory fought this as well. The church must be free from temporal power if she is to be able to effectively proclaim who Christ is. And this does not require a stretch of the imagination. How on earth can this line be equated with political power? Whoever wishes to be great among you must be your servant, and whoever wishes to be first among you must be the slave of all. For the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many. Celibacy is not the required practice among all priests all the way around the world. But I've always had in my own heart a deep suspicion of a guy who says he wants to be a priest but is not willing to make that sacrifice for people. I'm always deeply suspicious of a guy who says he loves a woman and he's not willing to forsake all other women for her sake. I'm also deeply suspicious of somebody who says they love others and they love the poor, and yet they are addicted to money and control and to power. We need to let the gospel deeply penetrate our life and our values so that something as blatantly supernatural as this can be lived effectively. We all love to hear this kind of teaching. We all love to be able to hold bishops and popes to account for this kind of standard. But if we truly believe in the equality of all Christians, if we honestly believe that we are the people of God, then this isn't something priests and religious have to do. This is on all of us. We shouldn't be fighting people are not doing it as much anymore, but we shouldn't be fighting who's the head of certain committees or who organizes this group or who is the first and foremost head honcho of whatever subcommittee or group. If we were really Christians, we would all be clamoring to clean the toilets, but also willing to give way when somebody wants to clean it for the first time.